Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Modern Farming Podcast, where we bring you insights directly from the field about food, agriculture, and the incredible environment we all live in. Hey, look, this morning, Brad and I wanted to just sort of recap, maybe revisit our last two guests, because Brad and I are extremely lucky, extremely grateful to be able to talk to people like John Lundgren and Will from White Oak Pasture. We are extremely grateful for the opportunity, and I hope everybody got something from that. You don't usually get that type of perspective from people in the field doing extraordinary things in agriculture as John and Will are doing. And I just thought it would be, we thought it'd be a good idea maybe to kind of recap and kind of fill in some of the gaps. Brad, I know you have a ton of experience with John Lundgren. You actually had the opportunity to work with him for a week or so here in Florida. Can you share a little bit? Because, you know, when he was talking, I asked him a couple of times about the cost or the ROI to the acre and whether this type of regenerative system was profitable. And he said, without a doubt, it is absolutely profitable. And he said, the data's in, the numbers are there. The research is on our website. So I actually went to the Ecdysis website. There is a bunch of research there. And the research that they do, that they have published, they presented, looks exactly like, or it is, scientific research. It reminded me of going back to college and kind of reading some of those scientific papers. So they're not just doing, you know, throwing a couple of flags in a field and spraying an acre. They're doing scientific research.
Yeah. He's doing more than what you and I do. We just go out and pull a few cores and take a tissue sample and call it a day. But yeah, when John contacted me last summer, said he was coming down to do his farm initiative on Florida citrus. And I told him, you better hurry up because there's not much left. So he brought his crew in, and it was amazing. He brings in like a team of about seven, and he has different teams. He just happened to be on this team that came to Florida, which was really nice because we got to spend a week together. But yeah, they go into I think it was 20 or 30 citrus groves that he had lined up ahead of time. Anywhere from some of them are, most of them are conventional, then there'll be maybe some organic, and then what he calls regenerative. And so he likes to have a variance. So the crew goes to a grove. They meet. He always wants the farmer there. And we've heard that discussion where it's as much about, you know, the farmer, you know, changing the farmer's mindset as you know, once they see some of this data. But yeah, the crew hits the ground running. First thing they do is run out three diagonal 100-yard tapes across a block. And then everybody grabs their tools and hits the ground running. They have a three foot soil probe. They have to drive it in with a sledgehammer, and then they separate those 6-inch cores out. And those are all going to get measured for chemistry, for respiration, for genomic testing, all the way down to 3 feet. And then they'll do water infiltration. They'll put a tube in the ground, pour water in it, time it, that kind of thing. The funnest thing to watch was they would take a box and just drop it. You know, they'd walk down the tape and they get to their mark. It didn't matter if it was in the tree row or in the middle. It was just random. And then two of these kids would sit down on their knees for a half an hour looking through for arthropods, bugs, sucking them up with a vacuum tube, and then putting them in alcohol to go back and identify and count and all that. But just a lot of different the coolest thing to me, which was very basic, was how he would measure above ground biomass, which, you know, that's what a lot of this is about, keeping carbon in the soil, not having bare ground. But he had a homemade PVC tool. It was a square PVC grid with a PVC pipe that had a piece of plexiglass on the bottom of it running horizontally. And he would just drop that at a random spot on the tape, and the weight of the plexiglass could only push down so far. So the more grass, forage that was there, it gave him a reading of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And so that's how he measured biomass on, and it was, so all that was really very interesting.
So great. I mean, and he talked about the amount of money that they have to raise every year that, you know, he's got to go out and find. And we're not talking about, you know, like you said, we're not talking about a small budget that you and I are running on. They're attracting big dollars. And, you know, you don't get that kind of money in agriculture or in any science if you're not doing quality research, right? Yeah. I mean, you got to have a product, and his product is his research. Yes. And it was just really fascinating to hear him talk. I mean, I love the fact, like you and I, you know, we came from a couple of different backgrounds here, but you grew conventionally grown citrus most of your life. And then you started to see another way and made the transition over to what you do now as a crop consultant. And I did the same. You know, I worked for a very large company called Syngenta.
Right.
Did a ton of work in GMO crops. And it took me, you know, probably 18 years to kind of see this side of the fence, which is, you know, more regenerative, more looking at the soil, not necessarily just feeding the crop. We're feeding the soil. And for John to be at such a high level in the federal government, he was working for, it was the USDA, right? He was an entomologist.
He's an entomologist. Yeah.
Yeah. And, which is so cool as in its own right, like as a profession. John studies bugs. that was his profession. And so it was just really interesting to get that perspective from a guy who worked for the federal government, who was trained in a college to look at agriculture in a specific way as we were. And it's really interesting to see what he's done now and just doing amazing work. If anybody has the opportunity to check out Ecdysis, please just Google them. Ecdysis, you'll find some of their research, their data is a little bit, you know, sciencey, but there's still some really great stuff in there. And if you're a grower, or a producer and want to kind of dig into that, just download the PDF and then hit the search button, you know, Control F. Search whatever you're looking for. You don't have to read the whole scientific, you know, dissertation there, but there is some really great data. Actually, all of his data is really great. And if you're considering making a change, or if you're considering looking at these types of systems, one, you could always reach out to Brad and I, but two, that's a really great resource that he shared with us. So if everybody has a chance to go back and watch that or listen to that episode, that was part of our Dirt to Dinner series. And this has been a really popular series. We get some data from our team. And it seemed to be a really popular series, which we were hoping for. And when we brought in, you know, Will, from White Oak Pastures, you know, he was somebody that I didn't know that Brad had already met. Are new very well, but I had seen him talk. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and you know, in Joe Rogan style, it was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
But the guy's voice was like, he's just so, he's so steadfast, you know, like he's so 100% bought into what he's doing. And there's not even a question whether it's the right way or the wrong way for him. But it was interesting to hear him say that this system of producing cattle the way they do it at White Oak Pastures may not necessarily be profitable for everybody.
Yeah, no, he did stress that quite a bit. And I think it can. It's just a lot of where Will talked about the processing and the marketing. It's not just that you can grow the cattle that way. That's actually probably the easiest part is, you know, it's time consuming in the beginning with what Will does. He's been doing it. He's large enough where he can have kind of permanent pastures where you're not moving electric fences all the time. But I first met Will 4 years ago. I went up for a workshop with Spencer Smith, who is he's the John Lundgren of cattle. and he gave a 3-day workshop. But that's where we went on the first morning. We went on the field day. So every morning, there's somewhere on his 3,000 acres, there's 1,000 to 1,500 mamas and babies on 30 acres that need to be turned into the next pasture. So he goes out, we loaded all the people in the class on the tour bus, the tour wagon. You go into the field that they're coming into, and it's just beautiful. You can see crimson clover and all the forages and different colors. And all these cows are not still milling around in that 30 acres next door. They're all huddled up to the gate. So there's no horses and dogs. There's one cowboy that goes up there and he makes sure he's out of the way. And he opens the gate and they funnel through. And it's like, it's almost spiritual. It's like it looks like a wave of a school of fish swimming through the ocean. Just, and they're all, they know what the best thing out there is to eat. They're eating the heads off the sunflowers. They're all going for that. And they eat that down for 24 hours and they go to the next pasture. So it's really a simple system once you get it set up. And that's how you really build soil health, is that kind of a system.
Yeah. And so that is white oak pasture. They have sort of, they sort of have this, ag tourism piece, like you can go and stay there.
Yeah, no, it's, he has probably at least a half a dozen cabins, pretty nice that he built. I was fortunate enough to stay, it's in his book, but he talks about the gator pond, and his father had built a little weekend shack on that gator pond. And that's where Will got a lot of his inspiration, just watching nature in that area before he got into this. But I was fortunate that he's kind of turned that into a shabby chic little, that's the high class cabin.
Okay.
400 square feet, one bedroom. But I was fortunate enough to stay in that cabin. And it's really cool because when I read his book and he talks about that cabin, that's where he and his wife, when they first got married, when it was still a shack, that's where they lived before they started having children. And so, but yeah, the restaurant is really cool. People don't go just for the restaurant so much. It's the locals, but the whole experience there to see the town that was a ghost town 15 years ago, where he says the only business that was open was the post office, and it
Wow.
pays a week. And now there's, he pretty much owns most of the town. He's bought up a lot of but the old homes that were run down, he fixed them up. His employees live in them. So it's really inspiring what he's done to a community.
It's really promising. It's not like they came from a bunch of money. He had to do this. He had to believe in it, spend a ton of money. He talked about, building all this stuff and having to build a slaughterhouse, something that he said multiple times on the show that he really isn't a fan of, but he knew he had to do it. And what else was it really interesting to me is that he talked about not really wanting to be in all the grocery stores that he's in. I mean, he says that he's going all the way out to the West Coast, and he would really rather not do that because he doesn't want to compete with other regeneratively, produced cattle or producers.
Yeah. He really is a community guy. I mean, same as John, and I think we're going to talk about that some later, what do we do with these big commodity farms that every acre of ag is not going to be a community type farm. How do we get these regenerative processes working on larger scales, maybe even without animals? But for Will, he would love to sell every piece of meat in his county. He produces too much for that. But like I said in the podcast, I buy his meat from Publix every week. It's his ground meat is in most of the Publix stores. In my area anyway.
Yeah. And we've been doing it here too. And I didn't know until 3 weeks ago when we decided to have him as a guest. And, I'm like, we've been buying this. We had no idea. Which I also think is interesting. Like my marketing brain, wants everybody like Will and White Oak Pastures to market the heck out of what they're doing. I don't think there's a big enough distinction on the grocery store shelves, especially here in Florida at Publix. I don't think there's a big enough distinction between what they're doing and, you know, your whatever your Angus, whatever it is, your USDA choice, whatever it be, I don't think there's enough distinction there on the label, which is really interesting to me. I remember working for Syngenta, and we were in Hawaii, and there was a lot of pushback on GMOs in Hawaii at the time. It was early thousands, right? And I remember always thinking to myself, I don't know why Syngenta, Monsanto, and all of us, why don't we just come out and tell the consumer where all of our products are? Because genetically modified corn and soybean stuff, right? High fructose corn syrups, whatever they be, they're in a lot of food. And we've been eating that food for a very long time. And there was such a pushback early 2000s. There still is. But I just thought it would be worth our while to market ourselves, to come out and tell the consumer, hey, yeah, I realize this is a technology that might scare everybody, but think about it this way. You've been buying these products for 20 or 40 years and you're not dying, right? Right. You're not, you don't have a third eye when everyone thought, you know, we're gonna all die. And so I just think it's interesting that they're not marketing that the way I probably would. And maybe that's the wrong way. I don't know. I would promote the heck out of what we're doing there.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, we know just because of the way they're fed, they just have to be healthier because we talk about diversity. They're eating diversity. They're eating what cows are supposed to eat. There is a difference in the flavor, but it can be done extremely more scientifically. Will does a great job. I talked about that workshop where this fellow Spencer Smith was there, and he actually starts dialing in to put fat to finish a cow, a beef, to get the marbling, the fat. It's all about sugar, essentially. And corn and grain has a lot of brix, sugar. But you can grow forage with a high enough brix to get the same sugar content, essentially, that you do from grain. Some of the science even goes into when to feed a certain forage to promote carbohydrates and when to promote fat for ketosis to build fat on an animal. So I have had some grass-fed meat and some from Will that was as good or better than any grain-fed meat I've ever tasted. So it can be done. It does cost more to do that. And that's a lot of the problem is until we fully understand the health benefits and what you're getting from that piece of meat, which I know we're going to be talking about those things in our upcoming series. It's difficult to sell that. I mean, I think when his chickens is almost $30 and Will says he doesn't even make money on the chickens. He does it for the health of the land, for the process to get the fowl into the system.
Right.
So there's a lot of moving parts in that process.
Yeah. Just before we move on, I know you have Will's book there. If you could, I know we mentioned it on the episode, but you've talked about this book several times. Just maybe reintroduce it to the listeners here.
Yeah, this is a bold return to giving a damn. And I think you can get it on Amazon. You can order it straight from Will on his website. But
it's called A Bold Return to Giving a Damn.
Yeah. One farm, six generations, and the future of food. It's very well written and it's entertaining and there's a little profanity in it. So just get over that. Will says what's on his mind. That's just who he is.
He was well behaved on the episode. He was well behaved on the episode.
Yes.
He
didn't. Yes.
Well, great. Yeah, no. So, Will Harris, A Bold Return to Giving a Damn, Brad raves about this book. I haven't read it. I just told Brad before the episode here, he is way ahead of me on the book game. But if anybody wants to find that, I wonder if it's on, what's that app where it talks to you, it reads the book to you?
Yeah, it is. That's how Matt read it. And that's how he did. So
is it Will reading it?
No. Oh, that, I don't know. I don't think so. Usually it's computer driven. So it's okay. Not, no, if it was wheel reading it, no, it would be awesome, but it's not.
Oh, it'd be so great. It'd be so great. But I know he doesn't have the time probably or the patience for that. He said he was very adamant about not writing a second book. So yeah. If you want to get that book, certainly jump on there and grab it. So, hey, you mentioned it a couple of times. So that was our series, Dirt to Dinner, everybody. And we really appreciate all the audience. And we had a lot of great feedback. If you can, please share that with your friends, your family. We are still certainly trying to build our podcast. We're doing great. Thanks to everybody, all of our listeners, those of you who keep coming back, keep downloading, keep watching on YouTube. We certainly do appreciate that as we build our brand and start to build this podcast out a little bit more. We are making some headway, but please share it with your friends, your family. Those were two very important episodes, two very important individuals that we hope, I don't hope, we're certainly going to have both of them back on. So looking forward to that. So Brad mentioned it. Next week, we're going to start another little series. Probably a 2 or 3 episode series as well. But early next week, we're going to be talking with David Montgomery and his wife as well. Share a little bit about David's story and what they do. Another really fascinating team there, a husband and wife team.
Yeah, David has really dug deep into soil and soil health. I met him at a conference again about 8 years ago. I was in the atrium reading a book on mycorrhizal fungi, and he had presented the day before. We were the only guys down there, and he was grading papers. He's a professor at Washington. And I just walked over to him and introduced myself and told him about what was going on in citrus and what I was doing. And so we connected, we talked for a while. So we've emailed back and forth over the years, but anyway, I asked him if he'd come on, and we'll be happy to. He's written several books, starting with a book called Dirt. That's just what has happened to our soils over the last couple of centuries. And then from there went into the biological fraction, had a book where he just traveled the country and met the Gabe Browns of the world and just started digging into regenerative agriculture. And then the book him and his wife Ann have just finished is one that really digs into nutrition. What is in our food, what isn't in our food, the measurements, phytochemicals, flavonoids. And so I think that's some of the stuff we're really going to dig into when we have the podcast with them next week.
Yeah. And I can't stress enough, you know, Brad and I talk about this. This is all we talk about, right? It doesn't always come out in the podcast because it's still a challenging subject to kind of wrap our heads around. And we certainly don't want to get so sciencey that you all stop listening. But really our goal here on the Modern Farming Podcast is to kind of show you the other side of agriculture and what modern farming actually looks like on both sides, whether you're conventional, regenerative, organic, or whatever. Brad and I appreciate all forms of agriculture. And we know for a fact, as Will said, not every cattle producer in America can do what he does. Matter of fact, he's flat out said that a lot of these people, you'd go broke if you tried to do it the way he's doing it. But there are ways for a lot of others to do it on a smaller scale or a different way to really look at that. But at the end of the day, what we're really looking for is how do we bring this nutrient density or nutrient dense food to the market? And Brad and I's goal here is to try to maybe bring that to everyone's attention of what is really in our food and what is really, what goes into producing that piece of steak or that corn or whatever it is we eat, because we think it's really important. And one of the things we think is missing in the American diet is everything Brad just said. So don't get scared. We're not going to get into chemistry or anything like that, but it is really fascinating when you hear someone like David talk. Their knowledge of going beyond exactly, you know, an ear of corn is an ear of corn, but them going into flavonoids, or as Brad talked about earlier, you know, growth hormones in beef and things like that, those all excite a reaction in our bodies. And I think you'd be fascinated to hear some of these people talk about what they've learned by doing agriculture in the way they do.
Yeah, yeah. And when you and I go out into the world to do this, you know, we're thinking about nutrient density. But when we're working with a farmer, I mean, we all kind of know and believe that the healthier your crop is, the more resistant it is to pest and disease. And that's really what you and I are shooting for. We're trying to make that crop more healthy. And a lot of that is through soil health, through the soil. But it's to make that farmer more resilient so he can use less pesticides. You and I aren't really thinking about it from the food side. We're trying to help the farmer. But it all pencils out, and it works for everybody. I mean, if that crop is healthier and more resilient, it is producing a higher quality product that in turn is giving a healthier product to the consumer. So it's a win-win. And these coming episodes, we're really going to dig into to what is in there.
Yeah, perfect segue to your friend Dan Kittredge. You know, Brad brought up a good point. What we do out in the field is we have a very difficult balance between the grower who needs to be profitable and the soil that doesn't care about the capitalist system. Exactly. Soil microbes don't understand stock options and P&Ls, right? They don't understand a bushel. They just, these organisms are going to work. So Brad and I have to find a delicate balancer. Dan Kittredge, who I've never met, but who every time I hear speak is like, man, again, just like Will, I can listen to Dan just talk forever. Just an incredibly intelligent individual. He's created like a bio nutrient kind of meter is what you called it.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's some technology. Dan, I think, was an organic grower up in the Northeast. And he, maybe in 2008, he started trying to figure out, okay, how can we measure nutrient density or the quality of our food? So he dove in really deep trying to come up with a machine, a handheld device that you could shoot a beam of light into a food and it give you a reading from 0 to 30. And it's not just zinc, manganese, and calcium and all that. This is taking all these flavonoids, all these different compounds in our food, and then giving it a score from say 0 to 30. So, and we've talked about this in the past, if you can put that beam of light into a carrot that gives you a score of 25, and then the next one's a 15 and the next one's a 5, well, you'll pay more for the carrot because you have to eat 5 of the lesser ones to get the food value of the more expensive ones. So that's what Dan works on. And it's kind of a game changer, I think, in the world of soil health, because now these farmers could afford to do more, because it does get expensive to make the transition, but just to build soil takes a lot of things to put carbon in the soil. Yeah. So that's Dan, and it's the BioNutrient Institute is what he has founded.
Yeah. Okay. The BioNutrient Food Association.
Yes.
Really cool. BioNutrient Institute. He's got kind of both on his email signature there. So BioNutrient Institute and the BioNutrient Food Association, Dan Kittredge. And then we're also going to have David Montgomery, and David's wife's name is?
Ann.
Okay. Two episodes, again, that are going to be knowledge rich, really kind of another side of the fence here in agriculture. And again, I can't say enough. I'm so grateful to be part of this podcast with you, Brad. You know so many fascinating people and set both of these folks up. So thanks for doing that. And folks, look forward to seeing that. We've got 3 or 4 different episodes already shot. We're working on a couple more. We're working with some teachers to kind of highlight what some of our teachers are doing in agriculture here in Florida and around the country. So we're building this thing out. So if you could stay tuned, certainly share us with anybody you can to help us out. Remember, you can go to the website, thegreengenefoundation.org, and you can click on the podcast button there. On the podcast button, you could subscribe or at least give us your email. We're not going to spam you. That's not what we do. We don't have a team to do that. So, excuse me. So don't worry about that. But what will happen is if you get on that list, you'll get an email every Friday when our team launches the next episode. So we are launching every Friday. I've been telling you folks we're every other Friday. I was wrong. Shocking. We are launching every Friday. And so look forward to this episode and more in the next several weeks. We've got several really great guests. So thanks, Brad. And we'll see you here very shortly.
Take care.